Greetings and welcome to Baron Crazy's Visions of Horror, season number 1, episode 32, covering the week of October 22nd through October 28th. Now, I know you guys are going to say, Baron, it's not the 28th anymore, it is the 29th. Yes, but when you're watching as many horror films as I'm watching, and let me get it straight with you all, I watched a ton of yesterday, and I'm still watching some right now. Taking a little breather here to get this show put together and put out there for you all to enjoy. Now, we started off the show, of course, with Ground Meat, with the track Pathological Silence. They're found on Facebook and, of course, through Bandcamp. So we always say support the bands. They desperately need your help so they can go out and make more music for you to be entertained with. All right, with that being said, you guys are already familiar with how the show works, but if you aren't, one more time. Basically, would you trust your friends that you've maybe played practical jokes on in the past or that you have a mutual rival with to pick the films that they want you to watch in the horror genre? I mean, would you do that? Would you let your girlfriend, boyfriend, significant other, whoever, choose movies for you to watch? I mean, think about that. Do you trust them? Do they know your viewing habits, or would they just go completely into left field and pick the worst of the worst? You know, it makes you start wondering of maybe how you should treat your friends. So with this show, we start off with a column. Now, I know we're a little behind on different things on this site. Don't worry. It's all coming together. But here we are with this show and what we're doing with it. So hopefully you guys all enjoy it. So let's start off with Sunday, October 22nd. Watch the film called Devil Dog, The Hound of Hell from 1978. It's a TV movie not rated 1 hour and 35 minutes in length, celebrating a 45th anniversary. It's a horror thriller movie. The director is Curtis Harrington. The writers for it were Stephen Karpf, K-A-R-P-F, and I'll just spell this next part. I will screw this name up. E-L-I-N-O-R. And the same last name. All right. So before I screw up the who's starring this film, we're going to use a Google Translator. It's something we do on the show quite a bit because I have a tendency to screw up these names terrifically well. And I know it may sound a little silly, but I want to try to get certain things in life correct. So here we go.
Richard Crenna, Yvette Mimieux, Kim Richards, Ike Eisenman, Martine Beswick.
Thank you, Google Translator. All right, the company put it out was CBS. Summary. A dog that is a minion of Satan terrorizes a suburban family. The rating for this is a 5.2 out of 10. I know it's a little shocking, but it does hold up in certain areas. Release date for it was originally October 31st of 1978. Now, a couple taglines. Now, as you all know, I love my taglines. As a tagline doctor, 3 to 5 words. I will also give the exact pronunciation and the affliction in the voice for them. So if it's in capital letters, I'm going to shout. Not that I'm shouting at you. So I got somebody last week to send me a message going, why did you yell? I said, I yelled because I was doing the taglines. And I needed to raise my voice for the capital letters. So there you go. All right. So Mike and Betty, just an average American couple. They have a home, a car, 2 kids, and 1 lovable dog possessed by the devil. All right. And the second one, a Halloween howler. All right. The second one is a playful one. It plays on it. The first one is just too damn long. We didn't need to know that Mike and Betty, it literally says Mike and Betty, period. Just an average American couple, period. They have a home, period. A car, period. 2 kids, comma, and 1 lovable. We didn't need it all that way. We didn't need to know they were an American couple. We didn't need to know they were a couple. We didn't need to know anything. We just needed to know. A lovable dog, Satan's spawn, something like that. You know, that would have been fun. We would have had it. We were set. Now, for those who are curious about going to places and finding out things, this is a private home, so be aware of that. If you're going to take a photo, be quick, stay on the sidewalk, and just get your photo and leave. The family home is found at 15457 Valley Vista Boulevard in Los Angeles. You know, if you think about it, with all the locations I give you on this show, you could make a field trip of your own all throughout Los Angeles on a rainy day. All right, little trivia for you all. This film was actually inspired by The Devil's Platform, which was the seventh episode of a total of 20 from the horror TV series Kolchak, The Night Stalker from 1974. Now, the film producers could not get the permission to continue the storyline from the TV episode, so they opted to do a new one. Also, that Tom Skerritt was in talks with Ridley Scott to do the film Alien in 79 and was unavailable for this film. And as for Richard, they wanted him to then become the, you know, they were offered to Richard to become the role of Mike Barry. And there you guys go. Little reference, obviously, is the Kolchak Night Stalker, The Devil's Platform episode where you have an evil dog from hell. Now, what is my thought on this film? Well, look, let's get a couple things straight here. Yes, it's a TV movie, all right? But it's also, it's got some fun with it. I mean, look, we're not going to have outstanding cinematography or phenomenal acting going into it. But it's not a waste of time either. There's something compelling to watch. If you want to just have a little downtime, you don't want to, you know, burn out your brain on something, then this is something you guys can definitely enjoy. I mean, look, the early scenes, we have Lucky, the devil dog. I mean, that's literally, I think, the dog's name, Lucky. It's a cute puppy. We get a little of the Children of the Damned Eyes. That's really, it's hilarious. I mean, it's so comical, of course. And that's a B-movie thrown in there with use of the blue screen. You remember those things. We get the black dog. It's got horns suddenly. It's come on, it's comical, all right? And of course, I think you have to just like how we got the cloaked Satanist, right? You know, running around in the background, so to speak. I mean, of course, you know, in 1978, we did have quite a bit of the dog in Hollywood. You know, you have the devil dog. You got, which of course brings us to Dracula's dog. If you even think about going a little before that, what did we have? We had dogs from, I think, 76, 77. So, yeah, there was a lot of dogs going on, all possessed, all crazy mutts out there. So, just something that was happening. But basically, how to put this? We have a satanic cult procures a dog for the sole purpose of breeding it with a demon. And then it has a huge litter, and then those dogs are given away to unsuspecting people all over the country. And this basically tells the story how one family gets caught in this unspeakable horror. Now, we do have to understand that we are not shown how the cult helps the animal breed. You know what I mean? We're not shown that. It'll be kind of an interesting thing. But yeah, we're not shown that. So it's got some, you know, of the melodramatic moments that you would find in TV movies. But yet, there's something still compelling to watch the movie. I'm not too sure really what it is. Now, you can find this film through YouTube. I actually put a link up on the Horror Times site, which is where you guys are probably now going with the script. Now, you guys got it into your head. Hey, let's go check out that script on the Horror Times. Because you found it on the podcast, you know what's coming up on the show. Not everything is that's presented on the script is there. So I should say, everything I talk about isn't always on the script. That's right. The Baron deletes things and then posts that script up there. Now, also on this day, I did see a few films. I saw Final Destination. And then we went into a weird marathon. And we was Final Destination 2. And then that led us to 3. And somebody said, hey, let's watch 4. And then 5. And then it really got strange. Because suddenly, we're now watching Halloween, The Return of Michael Myers, and Halloween, The Revenge of Michael Myers. And I said, wait a minute, why? And it went, well, I think it was AMC was running these movies, but we have the DVDs, so we'd rather watch the DVDs and the Blu-rays of these films rather than what AMC was putting up on the screen with all the commercial breaks. So it's just weird that someone decided, I guess, let's do what AMC's doing, but we'll do it here at home. All right. So anyway, I'm going to play a little piece of music for you. This music wasn't in the movie, but it's something we do when we try to take bands and their songs and kind of link them up to the movies. So this one we have from Fastball Promotion, Inner Access, with the track Hound of Hell. So enjoy this.
Hound of Hell, God in the
All right, so welcome to then Monday, October 23rd. The film's theme was Scream 2 from 1997, rated R, 2 hours in length. Anniversary? No. Horror mystery? Yes, that's what it was. The director was Wes Craven. The writer was Kevin Williamson, which you guys definitely know. I mean, look, I could tell you the cast. You guys all know the cast. I mean, let's face it, it's just a normal thing, right? I mean, Lev Campbell, you got David Arquette, Courtney Cox, Jamie Kennedy. I mean, I could go on and on and on, but you guys know all the stars. As for the company, Dimension Films put it out. The summary, 2 years after the first series of murders, Sydney is now getting used to college life. And someone decides to don the Ghostface costume and start a new string of killings. I guess they're just majoring in murder and mayhem. Hey, you got to have aspiring goals. You know, they always say, look up to your heroes. And I guess someone actually is doing that. All right, the film has got a 6.3 out of 10 rating. Its original release date for it was December 10th of 1997. All right, some taglines. Yes, there are quite a few, about 7 of them. So let's get into them. One, I'm going to tell you right now, way, way too long. But hey, I wasn't hired to do the taglines, sadly, so I've got to read what has been presented. There's a killer on campus, making more calls, making more kills. All right, here's the long one. The rules of a sequel. 1. The body count is always bigger. 2. The death scenes are much more elaborate. Uh-huh. Number 3. Scream again. 4. Someone has taken their love of sequels one step too far. Next one, number 5. It's showtime! 6. Someone has taken their love of sequels one step too far. And lastly, gorier, sexier, funnier. Okay. All right, so pretty much just a couple of locations for you guys to check out. The Angus Scott College in Decatur, Georgia, was a set for some of the scenes. And the Rialto Theater in Fair Oaks on Fair Oaks Avenue in South Pasadena was where the movie premiere in the scene, in the movie, I should say, occurs. So you guys got that. By the way, if you're going to go to the college, yes, you could technically walk on the campus and walk around as if you're visiting, but be careful. I mean, it is a private type of place. They could, you know, you could get trespassed, you could get in trouble. So if you're there, have a good cover story, I suppose. All right. With that being said, a little trivia, but you guys pretty much know the trivia, but I'll just throw it out there anyway. The cast was not informed of the identity of the killer until the very last day of principal photography. And in fact, near the end of the film, or the script, I should say, the last 10 pages of the script, basically everyone had to sign a contract that had a huge-ass penalty in it, so they couldn't talk about it at all. The scripts were printed on a gray paper, making it just about impossible to duplicate them in any way. These are all very normal things. In fact, if you're curious where something like this actually originated from, that would come from Alfred Hitchcock with his film Psycho. See, what Hitch would do would put out phony script pages and make people think that they were the real script pages as to who's the killer. He actually would have the Mrs. Bates, what do you call that? I guess her casting chair. So people would be confused. He would hire extras to be dressed as Norman Bates' mother, if you would, and walk around on set and be around. So people would start thinking, this is the person. They wouldn't really have put it together until it was the end of what was happening. So those little things like that, those were then, of course, incorporated by other directors throughout the years. So when you have a big film like this and you're trying to keep it closed of who's the killer, and you don't want anything to get out, this is a great way to do it. All the actors have to sign a huge-ass contract. I mean, one that's got maybe, who knows? It could have about 7 to nine figures in it. And you know, the bigger that number is, the less likely they're going to ever violate it. There's no way they're going to do it. They'll sooner chop off a toe than violate the contract. But it all comes back, always goes full circle back to Hitchcock when he did it. Let's see, what else can I tell you here? David Warner, you know, who played Gus, he was personally chosen by Wes Craven. And, you know, he was very impressed with his style of acting ever since he had seen him in The Omen from 76. In fact, Warner had actually auditioned for the main part of Freddy Krueger in A Nightmare on Elm Street. Obviously, he didn't get it. But in 1997, you know, it was a really big year for him, actually, because if you remember, he was in a film that was about a big boat, and it had a guy named Jack and Rose, I think, in it, and it hits an iceberg, and it sinks. And that was a shocker to the audience, because it went, oh my God, the Titanic is sinking! Yes, thank you for catching up with history. It's so nice you can find out things in movies! All right. So this film does reference The House on Haunted Hill from 1959. Pretty much when we have the theater premiere with the ghost faces flying over the crowd, like the theatrical release was done with House on Haunted Hill. But I never really, you know, went with that. I always thought there was other William Castle films that would probably been a better way to reference. But I liked it. It's a good send up to William Castle. Also, there's a scene of the shower head in that opening sequence in the film. Obviously, clear reference to Psycho 1960. The movie theater scene is a reference back to Messiah of Evil from 74. Of course, Mrs. Loomis is the reference to the character Sam Loomis, which is, of course, getting us back to Halloween. And, of course, that also drags us into Psycho. We got things for Face of the Death, Alien, Friday the 13th, He Knows You're Alone, which is, again, with the that opening sequence done really well, if you would. Final Exam, it's Randy Meeks mentions this movie in the phone conversation. Also, he mentions films like Graduation Day and The Dorm That Dripped Blood. The House on Sorority Row, that one there, folks, is from 1982. Splatter University from 84. The Terminator, excuse me, and A Nightmare on Elm Street from 84, which a lot of people like to reference to, but I really have to say I don't. I don't find the reference. Now, let me explain that. In a little after the first two murders occur, we're in Sydney's kind of dorm room. And one of the other characters has a sweater on the door. The problem is, it's not a red and green sweater. I think it's red and blue, if I'm not mistaken. So that's not the right thing. I think, personally, it was a mistake by the set designer that they put up the wrong color of sweater and was supposed to be the red and green. But it isn't doesn't look like a sweater, and it doesn't have the red and green to it. So I think that was a mistake by the set designer, not realizing what they were supposed to do. And during the day of direction, no one really caught it, and probably in post it went with, damn, look at that. Well, there's nothing we can do about it now. We'll have to let it go. So I just don't think that is a real tight reference, because the color scheme is off. And lastly, there is Demons from 1985. You know, when the scenes are on the stage and things like that are going on, that's all kind of related to that film. Also, of course, when the kids are talking about in class sequels and such, they mention Aliens and House 2, the second story. We also have a little reference to Friday the 13th, New Blood from 88, Cheerleader Camp from 88, and the opening sequence is inspired actually by, believe it or not, Popcorn from 1991. A great movie. Really got a small cult following to this film. I remember getting the Steelbook for it. It is great. I definitely recommend it. The film does, of course, spoof quite a few horror films, as its namesake does, in a way. It's what it does. It makes fun of them. It gives witty lines. Films that it spoofs, just for example, are Kingdom of Spiders, Halloween from 78, Friday the 13th from 80, He Knows You're Alone, and of course Scream from 96. It's nice when a film can poke fun of its own self. It features in the film Nosferatu 22, which I thought was really cool to put something different instead of always a nightmare, A Night of the Living Dead, so I was very happy with that. Of course, this film is followed by Scream 3, 4, then it's what, 5, and you got 6, and, you know, probably now 7's going to come down the road of entry, and you had the TV series. So, yeah, you know what's going on there. Basically, my thoughts on the film, it's still fun. It's clever, but not as clever as the original. And let's face it, the film could never match what was done with the first movie. The two killers, all of that, it just wasn't going to match. excuse me. It just wasn't. I always felt that the first film took a little from Strangers on a Train. Instead of the two killers crisscrossing each other to commit the murders, this time the killers were linked together and committing the murder. So I always kind of got that from Strangers on the Train, the Hitchcock film. Here, again, there's a lot of, you know, in jokes are done. There's a lot of in-film referencing. There's always, of course, the running and the screaming, which I always found really neat. Sidney saying in the first one, what is it? Some big-breasted girl is running around, screaming and running all over the place. I always found it interesting because there she is in this one, pretty much doing something pretty much similar to that. You know, the film does play with the stereotypes pretty well. We do have David Arquette as the, you know, lovable, likable for some people, you know, character. We find him to be that, I don't know, comfort, if you would. Fun in his role, if you would. So, yeah, there's a lot going on there. So I think that's pretty cool, too. And, of course, then we've got Jamie Kennedy and his sad death. That occurs, that was a big shock for a lot of fans out there. Anyway, saw the film on Blu-ray, and also on this day I saw, of course, Scream from 1996, and then Prom Night from 1980, Halloween 2 from 81, and Army of the Dead from 2017. So with that, we're going to play two tracks here before we move into our Tuesday film. First up is going to be the band Others with the track Keep On Screaming. And next is a nice little band here with the track, Say His Name, Candyman.
I wanna see you dead. You won't have an opportunity. See you tomorrow when the devil.
right, so listen, you probably noticed I stumbled on that last track I was telling you about, and there was a reason. We'll get to it. Basically, the band that put it out was called Blood Opera, and originally the information I had gotten from the PR person, Zach, had told me the track's name was Say His Name, Candyman. However, that then was changed to Be My Victim featuring Tony Todd in the song. Excuse me. And you can find that music through Bandcamp, and we put up the music video up on the Hard Time. So that's why there was a little stumble there, because after I said it, I said, I'll just fix it afterwards. All right, so welcome to Tuesday, October 24th. Film was Candyman from 1992, rated R, 1 hour and 39 minutes long. No, it's not our anniversary. It's a horror thriller. Bernard Rose directed it. Clive Barker and Bernard Rose wrote it. Look, you know who's in this film. I'm not going to go through the list because, again, you know this. This is one of those holiday favorites of ours. We all watch it. We all know it. So Virginia, Madison, Tony Todd, Gilbert Lewis. How's that? Just a couple names. Vanessa Williams. All right, moving right along. We have TriStar Pictures with the company. Summary. The Candyman, the murderous soul with a hook for a hand, is accidentally summoned to reality by a skeptic grad student researching the monster's myth. 6.7 rating out of it was originally released in October on the 16th in 92. We have about four taglines. Here we go. We dare you to say his name five times. Candyman, 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 Candyman. Don't say it again. You don't have to believe, just be aware. And lastly, from the chilling imagination of Clive Barker. All right, so no locations for you that we will deem right now because we were told not to do that by someone who's called legal. And they said, don't do that. People have done that and gotten in trouble, so don't. All right, a little trivia for you. The bees that were used in the film were bred just for this movie, and they had to make sure to make the bees only so old, because mature bees, they get stingers and they could do some damage. So much that Tony Todd actually worked into his contract a bonus of $1,000 for every certified bee sting that he suffered. And he was stung 23 times. So he made a bonus money of $23,000. That's not a bad way to get it done. Also, while investigating one of Candyman's crime scenes, Helen and Bernadette discover the design of the apartment's medicine cabinet made into a possible point of entry for the intruder. This is not a made-up piece of horror movie fiction. While researching the film, Bernard Rose learned that a series of murders had been committed in Chicago in this very same way. Kind of interesting, right? Virginia, Madison, she was absolutely definitely afraid of bees, and in fact, she stated that she was allergic to them. The powers that be didn't really buy that answer, but she did go to some medical testing, and it sounds like she is. So they had paramedics on the set at all times. But, you know, she was a trooper. She did the film, and she always got that kind of, set cred, you know, saying, hey, look what I did. It references, obviously, Dracula from 31, Frankenstein from 31, Kill Baby Kill, The Wicker Man from 73. It was followed by Candyman Farewell to the Flesh. Also, Candyman, Day of the Dead, and then the remake, Candyman, in 2021. My opinion is this is a great movie. It really is. It's a rare combination and successful of the creepy atmosphere. The visuals are fantastic in the movie. I really like a lot of the horror elements brought here. I think that from Clive Barker, we really got deep into a lot of his imagery there. We got this urban legend of the hook-handed killer. I think that's great, too. I think all the actors did a fine job. Tony Todd, fantastic in his role. I mean, when we saw him in Final Destination, we kept going, there's Candyman. Can't trust that guy. That's the Candyman. So, yeah, just a really great thing to have him there. Saw it on Blu-ray. Also saw Paranormal Activity from 2007 and The Entity from 1982. So our two pieces of music that we're going to play here. One is from a composer that we have no other information on, but we did have the permission to play his music. I'm going to spell this out. It's R-H-A-E-I-D-E. The track was Candyman, with then in parentheses, it was Always You, Helen. Next up then is going to be Mystic Prophecy with the track Dracula. Again, they are found through the label Rock of Angel Records on Bandcamp and Facebook. And Mystic Prophecy is also found all over the net. Just look them up and you'll be set. All right, so enjoy those two tracks.
Higher, fly through the darkest black. Dracula, kill desire.
All right, so welcome to then Wednesday, October 25th. Yes, the countdown to big high holy day is getting closer and closer. So the film here for today was The Horror of Dracula from 1958. Now, let me get this out first. It's a not rated movie, 1 hour and 22 minutes in length. And yes, I did see this film back in May. And just like I like flicks like Psycho, I watch it constantly. Just like a lot of you guys out there will watch a movie constantly. So what that it's on the list again? So what? I just enjoy the film so much that I was going to put it down here and enjoy it too. So there you guys go. Celebrating 56th anniversary, horror drama. Director was Terrence Fisher. Writers were Jimmy Sangster and Bram Stoker. Starring Peter Cushing, Christopher Lee, obviously, Melissa Stribing, Olga Dickey, believe it or not, Carol Marsh, and Michael Gough, G-O-U-H-G-H, excuse me. The companies that put it out was Hammer Films Production Company and Universal Pictures Distribution. Summary, Jonathan Harker rouses the ire of Count Dracula after he accepts a job at the Vampire's Castle under false pretenses. Harker's friend, Dr. Van Helsing, then embarks on a hunt for the predatory villain when he targets Harker's loved ones. The film got a 7.2, and I would have probably given it a 7.5. Release date for it was May 8th of 1958. Now, this scene's got a ton of taglines. Let me go through them. Here we go. Don't dare see it alone. Important note. Don't confuse this picture with any other Dracula movie. This newest and best one. The only one in Technicolor. Number three. Now she's one of the dead alive brides of Dracula. Sensational shock and thrill show. Every night he rises from his coffin bed and silently seeks the soft flesh, the warm blood he needs to keep himself alive. All right, here's another one. Frankenstein spills it. Dracula drinks it in the scene, the screen's greatest double feature. This was on a double bill of The Curse of Frankenstein, by the way. All right, here's another one that was on the double bill with Frankenstein. Double dose of full-color thrills. And next is Christopher Lee's fantastic first ever performance as the Lord of the Underdead. Okay. And then we have the chill of the tomb won't leave your blood for hours after you come face to face with Dracula. Two left. The terrifying lover who died yet lived. And lastly, who will be his bride tonight? You? Okay, I added the you part, but that's what they should have done. All right, trivia. This was the first time that Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee were top billed in any theatrical film. And it would be the last would be The Satanic Rites of Dracula in 1973. This film is referenced in a ton of movies. The Horror of Frankenstein, The Scars of Dracula, The House of Dread Blood, The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires, Q from 82, Waxworks, Matinee, From Dusk Till Dawn. I mean, it just goes on and on. In fact, A Night of Something Strange from 2016 even referenced it. It was followed by a slew of sequels. Really quick, here we go. The Brides of Dracula, The Dracula Prince of Darkness, Dracula Has Risen from His Grave. I have that original half-sheet poster of that one. The Taste, The Blood of Dracula, Scars of Dracula, Dracula AD, 1972, The Satanic Rites of Dracula, and The Legend of the Seven Golden Vampires. It was edited into the film Dracula Prince of Darkness from 66. This film has been featured in many TV movies, and of course, in many documentaries. Very easy for you guys to look that up. As for my opinion on this film, is this considered the best Dracula movie? I'm always asked that question. No, this is number three on my list of Dracula movies. For me, Dracula 2020 from the BBC is a close second, and to me the top one is Bram Stoker's Dracula, the Francis Ford Coppola version from 1992. If you look at the book and to what is occurring on the film, you'll understand my reasons for a lot of this. And I think those two films that I mentioned there, the Dracula 2020 and, of course, the Bram Stoker's, they could probably go back and forth constantly in my head of which one is the top one. But those two there, this one is number three. It really does hammer it home. No pun intended for the Hammer Studio. I think Peter Cushing nails the role of Dr. Van Helsing really well. Made the role, really did, really carried it up to a whole nother level. He might be personally considered probably one of the best Van Helsings. I think it would go him and then probably Anthony Hopkins right below him. But they were very good in their perspectives. Of course, Peter Cushing and Christopher Lee, you know, they had worked together. They knew each other. They were trained actors. They knew their marks. They knew how to get the best out of each other at any given moment. So they do really well there. And Christopher Lee really becomes the new Dracula, if you would. I mean, Bela Lugosi died about 2 years prior to his role, and he just really embraced it really well. For good or bad, he nails that role really well. You know, he puts his stake on it right through it, and not a pun again. Anyway, saw through a DVD. It's been up on AMC a lot this past week, and you guys will definitely enjoy it. All right, so also saw Farmhouse from 2008, Cabin Fever from 2002, The Amityville Horror from 79, and Cargo from 2017. Going to play two tracks here. First up is going to be Brandon Fleischer with the track Count Dracula. Oh, I should mention we're also going to sneak another track in there. Not going to tell you who it is. That way, make sure you're all paying attention. Oh, okay. It's the 3D Invisibles with the track Christopher Lee. There you go. I should have done that. And, of course, we're also going to play Siblings of Samhain with the track Vampires Everywhere. Enjoy. Thank you.
Christopher Lee hides in the shadows, waiting for you and for me. Christopher Lee made lots of movies, I'm sure you've seen him on TV. And he wears his face like a noble mask to hide the churning bloodlust lurking deep inside. Christopher Lee lives in a castle over in England somewhere. Christopher Lee wears a sharp looking suit and neatly combs back his hair. And he wears his face like a noble mask to hide the churning bloodlust lurking deep inside. Behind his eyes flames roar, a hunger burns at his core. Every night he stalks the land, hunting souls to command. A cinema symbol of sex. Christopher Lee isn't a homo, he likes women with beautiful necks. And he wears his face like a noble mask to hide the churning bloodlust lurking deep inside. Thank you.
All right, so all those bands there, all respectfully, can be found through Facebook and Bandcamp. Again, go to the hardtimes.com page, and you'll see all the links for everything there. Right, okay, we're moving on to Thursday, October 26th, and the film that was seen was Vampires from 1998. I don't know, somebody decided, I guess, to watch, have me watch The Horror of Dracula, and then the next day watch Vampires. So that's literally how that happened. Rated R, 1 hour and 48 minutes long, celebrating its 25th anniversary. Horror action thriller. Director was John Carpenter. The writers were John Stakely and Don Jacoby. Starring James Woods, Daniel Baldwin, Cheryl Lee, Thomas Ian Griffin. Just to name a couple. Company they put out was Columbia Pictures. Summary. Recovering from an ambush that killed his entire team, a vengeful vampire slayer must retrieve an ancient Catholic relic that, if it should be acquired by vampires, would allow them to walk in the sunlight. The film got a 6.1, whose original release date was October 26th of 1998. We have about five taglines, so here we go. First one. The blood confrontation of the ages is about to begin. Number two, the final confrontation between good and evil has begun. Three, they've been around for 600 years, and they're very, very thirsty. Number four, from the master of terror comes a new breed of evil. And lastly, prepare for the dawn. Okay, there you guys go. The only location really for you to check out would be the historic Plaza Hotel at 230 Plaza Park, Las Vegas, Mexico. This is where Montoya and Katrina are staying until Jack Crow's arrival. So that's how you can note that hotel. A little trivia for it. While it was a horror movie, John Carpenter kind of treated this more as a Western. James Woods took it on because he's never really played the lead in an action movie, so he wanted to do that. I find this neat. Everybody has got it all over the place. It's not a horror movie. It's a Western. It's not a Western. It's an action movie. It's not that. It's this. Okay. And yet, the film is great. It's a great B movie. I really like it a lot. I think that was really good. And what people don't realize is that the studio cut the budget by two-thirds before they were going to make it. So yeah, these are not your typical vampires. They don't sparkle. They're not out during the daylight. And they're not looking to breed with you. They're looking for your blood and how to slaughter you. Like I said, I call it a great B-movie. It's popcorn entertainment. It's got a lot of, I wouldn't say it's like a milestone movie or, it's vastly important that you got to see it. But you'd be an idiot to pass this up. Woods is maybe not the most likable of heroes in the film, but he's at least watchable. He kind of delivers a believable performance. Cheryl Lee does really good in her role, but, the master vampire, his name is Valak. I mean, I always find that a little bit interesting. Valak, and then you think about the nun, Valak. They're spelled just a little different. Instead of an E, like they have here in Vampires, the other one has it as an A. So two A's, and this one it's an A and a V. Really close on that. I just found that's really interesting always. But look, yes, does the film have flaws? Of course it does. But is it? It's not really terrifying. But there's a lot of brutality in there. It did have some trouble getting through the MPAA. Had to be edited quite a bit. It does have a misogynistic bent to it. I will warn you about that. But the B-movie part of it really works well. It gives you that cockiness to it. You see the characters eating their scenery, so to speak, really working with what's behind them, around them. I think it's really done. Now, there's a lot of off-color humor. A lot of people are not going to like that. But we do have to admit, there's a part, I want to say, late in the second act that the film starts to drag a little bit. There's too much dialogue going on. It's like sputtering to figure out, wait a minute, I can't get the thing in gear to figure out how to get going again. So that's a little rough there. And that last, last 15 minutes, ooh, there's something just, I swear, it's in the editing. There must have been a scene or something got removed from that where things are just a little half step off. The pacing is fine, but there's something there should have been there. I don't know what it is. I mean, I've watched it many times, and there's just something where, I don't know, it's okay, it's entertaining, but, you know, it's right there. The ending works. Don't get me wrong, the ending works. It lines with the first sequel that we never get, so that's the sad part, for a while. Eventually we do get a sequel, but it doesn't come from Carpenter. He doesn't do the sequel. So I found that when we got to the sequel, it was, okay, the sequel. But, you know, I really like this film. There's a lot to it, so, you know, you take it for what it's worth. I kind of made it, in my mind, like the Wild Bunch gets to enter into a horror movie, if you would. So there you go. Saw the film on DVD. Also saw Dark Mountain from 2013 and Grave Encounters from 2011. Somebody wanted to go down the road of found footage movies. Why? I'll never have a clue. All right, so we're going to be playing here two tracks. It's the 3D Invisibles again with Vampires A Go-Go, and then Cadaver Club with the track being Vampires Ain't What They Used To Be. Both bands are found on Facebook and, of course, Drew Bandcamp. So enjoy these tracks, and we be back with Friday's film. Well, hope you guys enjoyed the music there. So, Friday, October 27th, the film was Plague Town from 2008, not rated, 1 hour and 28 minutes long, 15-year anniversary, horror thriller. The director was David Gregory, who also helped out with the screenwriting, along with John Cregan. The film stars Dave Lombard, Lindsay Gorison, Eric Rhodes, Jocelyn D. Crosta, and James Wark. Film that company that was put out by was Dark Sky Films. Summary: an American family visiting their Irish roots accidentally stumbles upon a horde of bloodthirsty mutant children. All right, this got a 4.5 out of 10. I'd probably just give it a 4. This got a release date of October 27th, 2008. Tagline: one tagline, four words long. It's in the blood. Okay, that's it. This film was filmed in Connecticut, not Ireland. And the original bit of trivia for you here is that the film had original title of Slaughter in Plague Town. Kind of like the title, actually. As for my opinion, look, the film starts off good. A few glitches. Tries to get some tension there, but doesn't really work it too well. Starts to get, kind of a slippery downslope here. Don't even think about the logic of the plot. Just toss that out. There's a so-called plague, some isolationism going on with it, murderous desires that are really kind of left unexplained. Just note that. It's low budget, okay? We have an unknown cast who do try their best. I mean, I really could see the actors were trying their best to put their best foot forward, really doing it. I liked how I didn't really see many of the actors looking down at the ground, looking for their spot, their mark or anything. They may have had a few moments before they went into it. At least they went over their lines. They knew them. There wasn't a lot of stumbling over that part. But, there wasn't anything really cinematically terrific about the movie. I think that they tried to create the atmosphere, but it's just lacking in certain things. And that's, you get the atmosphere. Yes. Did you let the location speak? No. Then you're trying to work with your plot. It just really felt to me that they were juggling 7 balls in the air at once. And then someone threw an egg in there too. And then all of a sudden they went, I got 7 balls. And I got an egg. I got 7 balls. I got an egg. I got 7. Oh, damn. I scrambled the egg. I just dropped some of the balls. Oh, damn. And, things start falling apart definitely late in that, in that second act. Things get muddled. It's almost like we start well, we get our ending, and then in the middle, something doesn't work out well there. But, it does try. And I guess that's the best thing you can ask for. So, found the film actually on, I believe it was Tubi. So you guys can check that out. I also actually have it on DVD, so I had 2 ways of watching it. So also saw on that day, Zombie Night, the TV movie from 2013, The Eyes of Laura Mars, which is written by John Carpenter from 78, The Ghost and Mrs. Muir from 47. My girl wanted to watch it, so guess what? I watched it. And House of the Damned from 63. The music that we're going to be playing here is from a band called Storm Siege, and the track is Plague. The band is found on Facebook and, of course, on Bandcamp and other social media sites out there. So definitely check them out. They are a thrash band, so be aware of that. We'll be right back. All right, so welcome to Saturday, the end of the week, the 28th. Saw the film Black Sabbath. No, not the band, the movie. From 1963, approved rating, 1 hour and 37 minutes long, celebrating a 60-year anniversary. Horror director was Mario Bava. Now, as for the writers and the stars, we're going to ask Google Translator for a little help. So first up is our writers.
Anton Chekhov, Alexei Tolstoy, Guy de Maupassant.
Thank you very much, Google Translator. Now, as for our stars.
Boris Karloff, Michelle Mercier, Mark Damon, Lydia Alfonsi.
Okay, thank you very much. The companies that put it out was Warner Brothers from Italy and American International Pictures from the United States. The summary was Boris Karloff hosts a trio of horror stories concerning a stalked girl, a vampire-like monster who preys on his family, and a nurse who is haunted by a ring's rightful owner. So the film has a rating of a 7.0. Do concur. Release date was August 23rd of 1963. We have quite a few taglines, so here we go. The third one in is way, way too long, and the last one is extremely long also, and you'll definitely be able to tell when I read them. So here we go. This is the night of the nightmare. All right, number two. This is the night of the nightmare, the day of the undead. Number three. A story that goes beyond the boundaries of the supernatural to the half-world of the living, dead. Where a woman's soul inhabits a fly's body, where vengeance is the only voice, and where vampires suck only the blood of those they love the dearest. Okay, told you. All right, number four. The most gruesome day in the calendar of the undead. Number five. The most gruesome day in the calendar. Six. Not since Frankenstein have you seen such horror. And lastly, here we go. Now listen carefully, because it's going to sound just like that third one, but it's not. A story that goes beyond the boundaries of the supernatural to the half-world of the living dead. Where a woman's soul inhabits a fly's body. Where vampires suck only the blood of those they love dearest. Okay, that's it. There you go. Once. Now, if you notice between those two, they had the part in there where vengeance is the only a voice. They eliminate that portion in that last tagline, but it's too long. It's just far, far too long. So this is the only horror film to star the horror icon Boris Karloff playing a vampire. So there you guys go for that. Also, this movie inspired the heavy metal band Black Sabbath. When they saw that there was a line across at a theater lining up for the Black Sabbath, the band noticed something that we as horror fans always know. That is, horror sells tickets. They immediately changed the name, and, well, that's all the history. There are two different versions of this movie. There is basically done for a more marketable way with the Western audiences. The AIP changed Boris Karloff's introductions and rearranged the order of the stories. Otherwise, the Italian is the original cut. Is referenced in Black Christmas from 74, The Tenant from 76, Shock from 77, and Dead Silence from 2007. My view of this film is you can't go wrong with it. You can't. It's a great, great piece of art that you should do yourself a favor and watch. I mean, Boris Karloff is in it. Do I need to say any more? It's the stories are all unrelated. I like that. They have aged. Don't get me wrong. 63, they have aged. But there's something still about the film. It works. I mean, it's got the vampires. It's got weird deeds and sinful things that are happening. And the murders. And there's so many great things with these storylines. Now, I know some people, depending on how you watch it, you may get the dub version of it, so you may not like that, or you may have to read the subtitles, because this is a foreign film. This is done in Italian. For some of us who, you know, I can't speak Italian, but I can pick up on a lot of the words and understand the storyline is going on, that's not a problem. A lot of times with a film like this, I'll actually just mute it and watch it and see if the scenes that are occurring on the screen tell me enough about the story so that when I go back and I listen to maybe a dubbed version of it, I can really understand what's occurring. And hearing those words, did those words actually tell me what I was seeing, that I visually got the cues of? And a lot of times it works out pretty well. It's something I suggest you to do. But that's really all I want to say about that. I have this film on DVD. It's how I watched it. I also saw on this day quite a few other movies. For some reason, we were watching the movie Music Store Massacre of 2013. I was just walking through the living room. Somebody had grabbed it, I guess, and put it on. Terrifier from 2016. I guess basically, as you said, we watched that to get ready for the re-release of Terrifier 2. Island of Lost Souls from 32, Dead and Buried from 1981, and Dead and Breakfast from 2004. I could see why someone chose these two. On my bookcase, if you would, of the films, these two are right next to each other, just because of the titling. So somebody said, ooh, let's pick this, and let's pick that, and that's how we got it. All right. So with that being said, we're going to basically close out our show. We're going to finish out here with two bands. First up is Stormtroopers of Love with the Black Sabbath cover track from the band Black Sabbath. Guess you can figure that out. And you can find them on Facebook and, of course, on Bandcamp. And, of course, as our customary thing to do, is Bloody Hammers with the track Welcome to the Horror Show. They are found on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, Bandcamp, pretty much every social media site. And, of course, we got the video playing at the bottom for their music video. So with that, I thank you. Next week is going to be insane with the number of films we're going to be watching. But please take time to like us on Facebook under the Baron's Crypt. They'll like the Hard Times on Facebook. Of course, you can like me if you want to on Facebook or Instagram. That's right, I'm on Instagram now a lot, so you guys can definitely check us out over there. Otherwise, that's it, and enjoy all the horror that is out there. We'll be right back.
man. It has been so nice.
So far out of range.
The blame is left on all of you too.